I will just put things into perspective and then get to the commitment for me to table the report to the report for the committee. I think from the handover briefing that I got, firstly, I am aware of what General Ngobo has put forth to the committee. The investigation that was commissioned by Lieutenant General Motiba, it was assigned to Lieutenant General Lidwaba. That still stands and is correct. Then General Lidwaba has submitted an interim report up to this one. And then what is awaited is for him to provide a final report. Then, as I was briefed, I have issued an instruction to say this matter can't be dealt with in a segmented fashion. It need to be encompassed in one report so that we can then have a report to the portfolio committee. And what is going to happen now, I'm going to hand this matter over to the new Deputy National Commissioner for Crime Detection, who is the most senior person. Everything in terms of this investigation is going to put under one umbrella, and in January, we will provide a report to the Portfolio Committee. Thank you very much.
General, I think that will be in order. Thank you. Let's go through the other responses.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. There was a question relating to the Uber taxi violence. It's an operational question. I'll hand over to the operatives. Okay. There's the Brigadier. The question around the Uber taxi, can you respond? Thank you, Chair.
General, Mr. Chair, when it comes to the taxi environment, crime intelligence is responsible to address that threat through three types of operations. The one is your tactical operation, you have a network operation, and then you can also have a pre-operation that's more on the secret services side, or you can have a fully fledged undercover operation. I must admit that the specific stats or the reasons we will provide information and we'll run the project and we'll give the information through to the detectives or the DPCI. I must admit, they said honesty is the best policy. I can't at this stage say why is there so few arrests. Maybe it's something we can ask the National Commissioner and join with the detectives and the DPCI, see what's the reasons behind us if we supply information, what happens at the end that the people are not arrested. But I apologize, I won't be able to answer why there is a few arrests at this moment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I will talk to measures which are also going to be flowing from the turnaround. I think firstly we are going to attach value to crime intelligence information as part of an input that is made to policing. And all operational environments, they will account how did they optimally utilize this each particular information. And if for any reason this information has not been optimally utilized, there will be performance management steps that will be taken. And this will be linked to the performance management system of the organization. We will work on this area so that there is improvement. Thank you, Chair.
General, let's go to the other responses. Jim Kobo.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. On the early warnings, before early warnings, through you. There was a question that was raised regarding the trip to France. I don't know whether I can answer to that. That Brigadier Petley was withdrawn as instructed by the committee. She did not go to France. France trip. On the early warnings, we do inform the NAT joint when there are early warnings. Through NAT joint, then NAT joint will cascade it down to NCCF to inform, even up to the PC to the clusters, the provinces, to say there's something that is going to happen. Then that's when the operational groups, the units, get ready for that. Maybe if it's going to be a march, if we get the proactive early warning, we inform them. If people are going to start marching at 4, we deploy as early as 2 o'clock. They arrive, we are there. I don't know if I answered correctly, Honorable Molibat.
Thank you, John Kobo. Right, General Kobo.
We will continue with all the operational questions.
The next one was Honorable Mula. Mula, who asked the issue of, I don't know whether the general asked the issue of a structure in December. There's this question here, if whether we are going to meet the directive. On that one, Honorable Chair, we are going to meet with the OD next week on our strat plan. So we accommodate them, so they'll be with us for the whole day, so that we try and meet the deadline. Because currently, the CI structure does not have counterintelligence, because it was envied Sage before that counterintelligence was going to be the division on its own. So we took a decision in our review session to say counterintelligence stays within crime intelligence, and so we need to work around that so that crime intelligence, counterintelligence, be incorporated in our structure as crime intelligence. And we are hoping to meet the deadline by the 31st of December this year.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. There is a question on the denial of security after an appeal. I think General Zima will respond to it.
Chairperson, honorable members, thank you. Chairperson, I will request, because the other members also before that raised issues around the powers of the minister, whether it's arbitrary or it's contained in the policies. There are also issues raised about the capacity challenges and linking that with then what happens when those people don't have a clearance certificate. Now, those issues, Honorable Chairperson, are all covered by the law and the policies. I will go quickly through the law. The relevant section, first of all, in terms of clearance certificate, states that when someone is to be appointed, it's not as categoric as it seems. It says the security screening may be conducted. It doesn't impose a direct obligation that it must be conducted. Now, then the missed document covers that aspect by then making a provision that when any person is utilized without a security clearance, the responsible screening institution and the National Intelligence Agency must be furnished every year with a certificate regarding such a person's security conduct. the SAPS Act also to supplement that in Section 70 and Section 71 requires that such a person must sign an oath of secrecy in terms of the two sections. So that is what happens when a security clearance has lapsed. Then you would be required, in terms of the SAPS Act, to sign that oath of secrecy in terms of Section 70 and Section 71. In terms of the powers of the minister, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, the original Act of the National Strategic Intelligence Act, in terms of its provisions, left the issue for the minister to decide. And then there was amendment. Now, in terms of that amendment, it's amendment 288A, capital A. It's then that the minister is assisted by establishing a board or a panel which should assist the minister to carry out that function. So in terms of the amended act now, the minister has to appoint a board or a panel which would assist the minister to make that decision. The other issues, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, that were raised is the issue of the test in terms of confidentiality and then a confidential certificate on the other hand. The test relates to the documents that would be handled by a prospective appointee. Now, then in terms of the test, it's what is contained in the presentation that has just been made now. But the Act, the National Strategic Intelligence Act, then focuses the vetting process on three main issues, and then it says any other issue. Now, to establish the security competency of that particular individual, then it would require us to focus on criminal records, financial records, and personal information. The reason then when we make that conclusion on those issues is that in terms of the MIS Act, then we have to assess the susceptibility of the individual to being blackmailed or extortion and so on. Also, the amenability to bribes, as well as the susceptibility to being compromised. Now, once we have that report, we look at what would have gathered, whether it gives us a picture of a person in terms of the requirements of the security, who would be able to meet the requirements of either a confidential or a top secret and so on, based on the information and the report that would have gathered. I hope Honorable Chair addresses the issue.
Thank you, General Zimu. There's just a follow-up from Honorable Shlongu and Honorable Mbele.
No, thank you, Chair. No, thank you, Chairperson. No, then General Zimu, you know, that this sentence here, the minister may either vary or approve the recommendations by the board. I think that's where the question was, because according to what you are saying, the minister will make a decision informed by the findings by the board. But here the sentence says, the minister may even vary the decision by the board and make his own. That is where then one was saying, what kind of overarching legislation or act or regulation will be utilized by the minister? Simply because, as the committee chairperson, I'm saying that chairperson because, as the committee, our main task is to hold the executive and the parliament is to hold the executive accountable. What if then the board suggests something which is correct and the minister make variations that are completely illegal? Because the minister may vary decision of the board according to this sentence here before us, chairperson. That is my interpretation. I don't know if I'm lost, but it doesn't necessarily tally with what General Zimu is saying, because according to what General Zimu is saying, is that the minister will actually then, as a mouthpiece, pronounce on what the board has actually made findings on. But this sentence says, the minister may vary the decisions of the board. Then that's where then the question, what kind of overarching act or regulation that the minister will depend upon to vary the decision of the board?
I think it's also, I mean, the minister's decision will be reviewable if it's irrational. So I think there is at least that, from a legal point of view, that assurance. But let's get the responses on Mbele.
Thank you, Chair. Just to confirm my understandings, just for my record, so if I'm ever confused again, I can go back to my notes and be like, ah, that's the issue. So if I understood General Zimo correctly, the meaning of a confidential security clearance is that aspects of the information or reports that back up or underlie the security clearance as the final product, those aspects may then have limited access, whether it's financial records or you mentioned financial records and other kinds of information. And maybe a metaphor might be useful because that's what helped me understand it. In the same way that we as members have to declare our interests once a year, we have to declare everything, but there are some interests that we can declare in a confidential section, which means that it's on the record, but they aren't publicly accessible unless there's a special application made to the registrar of interests and a motivation to view that. So that was the comparison I was making in my head to understand what a confidential security clearance might mean, that there are aspects of the underlying information or reports that have limited access, in the same way that we have a confidential section in the member's declaration of interest. If that's correct and clear, Chairperson, then I'm happy. Thank you.
Much, General Zimo. Thank you.
Honourable members, yes, with regards to the minister's power, Chairperson, it is hoped that when whoever would be implementing the provisions of the Act would be knowledgeable with how the Act should be implemented. I agree, Honourable Chairperson, that initially those were the powers of the Minister, but in terms of the current Act now, not in terms of the presentation, that subsection is denoted in capital, which then would, to the person who must implement it, would make him understand that this was the original position, but now the current position is that the Minister has to establish a panel, because that's how it's captured. It's 8A, it's 8 capital A. So if I read the Act, I would start with the one that you are raising concerns about and say, no, the minister can just vary. But then when I get to 8 capital A, then I realize that that part has been amended to suggest that, as the Honorable Chair made the suggestion, that the decision must be rational and reasonable, to suggest that then there must be a panel in terms of the amended Act. So the expectation is that someone who implements the Act knows how the Act should be implemented.
So, Chairperson, if I hear well what General Zim is saying, because here I was very much concerned that then the minister's decision is final. When the board has done everything, and the minister having made his or her own variations, that decision is final. That was where my fear was, that it becomes now just a purely political decision rather than a regulatory decision. Now, if then that's what the Act is, so then it means we will delete this kind of a sentence to say this sentence is no longer, it means the board's findings are actually fine, but then the minister, as a political head, makes pronouncement on the basis of that, which is not then meaning to say that the minister, because if and only if we were to allow that, I can tell you, we are in this mess because of some wrong political decisions that have been taken. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Robert Lacani.
No, Chair, just a quick two questions.
before. Just this one. I'm attracted to the interaction between Honorable Mhlongo and Major Simo on the other side about the minister. The real life is the backstop somewhere. The act is designed and it gives the powers, but it also gives the final arbiter in terms of the act. In this case, because it's a police matter, it will end up with the minister. But there's always a recourse in the event that anybody does not like that decision that has been taken. That's a review if the decision is not rational. You will not find the act where the box does not stop anywhere, because the act is tailor-made in terms of the constitution, the authority, and in this case you have the authority at the level of ministers. So I was attracted to say you're not going to get a pure thing where the minister does not feature. And I understand your concern that you are raising, but in real time, in terms of the, how the government works, you're not going to be able to run away from that particular. That's why you have another stage, which is the courts or the review process, that you review any decision that is being taken by anybody in government, including the decision of the president get reviewed in court. So you have always a check and balances that is built into a process. But my two questions, I wanted to make a suggestion, Chair, because of my pressures here. General Ngobo's earlier comment about this whole Backwards and Forward story, and General Stott. Earlier on, I mentioned this question about the concern that we have about information that is not correct, and that we are told information that is not correct, that has an implication to our work. I just want to know whether the statement that General here was making around this investigation field, it's a mind-boggling story, or whether that proposition is a correct proposition. Because you also had the time to have your own whispering during the tea break. Is that?
Mr. Mlekani, you were out. I think we concluded that point already. I think we got a commitment from the National Commissioner that the newly appointed National Commissioner for Detective Service, who's going to be announced this afternoon, will oversee a process where all these elements will be investigated. And in terms of time frames, SAPS will report back to us in January on all the various aspects in terms of the issues relating to the IGI, the disciplinary steps, and all the related roadmaps. So that's the understanding we've got with the National Commission.
Thanks for helping me, Chair, on that issue. The section that I was talking about is in fact on the information presented, whether that information, which one is the correct information. That's what, and I'm not asking that you give us response now. You may not have to give it. But I think we need just to give some undertaking that whatever is said here is what we must work on. Both General Ngobo and yourself, sir, if that we can be assured on that. And the last thing that I wanted just to say, Chair, section that I was going to ask is keep running away from me now, because my train of thought went somewhere else. I wanted to say, Chair, earlier on, I'm a bit worried. Mm-hmm. Very worried. I don't want us as a committee to be implicated on administrative function of SAPS. It will not be correct for us to demand a suspension of any official. We don't, for an example, there's a report that's outstanding that we need to be presented with. And everything here is recorded. I don't want us as a committee, just a cautionary for us, that our record here becomes a subject of whole lot of court review, that prematurely somehow we take a resolution without having the facts, and we flock match the management of police to an action of suspension. It's not our function. All what we are going to do is to critically evaluate the report that is presented to us. I wanted just to say that, Chair, it's a cautionary thing.
No, I agree with you. I think it's individual statements of members, of course, but that's not the view of the committee. I mean, to be quite clear on that, that is an autonomous decision by SAPS. We want a report so that can we evaluate. No, that you're absolutely correct, yes. But of course, individual members, they can voice their concerns in the strictest terms. Freedom of speech allows for that, but that's not necessarily the view of the committee. You're correct. Let's get maybe those responses, General.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. The matter regarding the investigation conducted by General Lidaba is included in the package where we've already made a commitment. Then there was a question relating to the feasibility study of CI. That feasibility study is not only related to CI, there's also it's linked to the feasibility study for the headquarters of SAPS, where we will also check into the size of the headquarters that we need. But the commitment that was made here, it's going to realize, and it's from also next week, the new DNC will also be working on it, so that the feasibility study team, which is our OD department, they present the feasibility study. So it we will continue with it. The festive season of operation, I want to explain a principle. There's one festive season operation for the whole organization, and that particular festive season operation is made up of the different festive season priorities and operational plans of the different divisions. And CI, as one of those divisions, they also design their own festive season, which is a sub-operational plan, then, but it's linked to the broader framework of the festive season. And as they implement, they are also subject to the operational instructions that are flowing from that particular plan. So they do have their own festive season operational plan. The annual intake of SAPS, the total is 5,000. 3,800 is Police Act, 1,200 Public Service Act employees. There's an additional 500 for re-enlistment. Then the next question is relating to the activation of the of task teams in terms of Section 9, and Brigadier Lombard is going to respond to this question.
Thank you, National Commissioner. Brigadier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to answer the question, let's quickly look at the whole project that was established to look at the repeat offenders first, the wanted people. That started already in May last year, where it was initiated in May. And then during June, they started with the implementation, and the roadshow was finished during October. So during October, the first provinces received the 20 most wanted criminals to investigate and to try and trace. And then depending on how they fared with those 20, they were given additional. Now that task team that was established under the provincial commissioner, for these wanted projects, they are operating at the moment, and they are under the direct command and control of the provincial commissioner. The provincial commissioner reports monthly feedback to the divisional commissioner of detective service, and then based on their performance, they will either be an intervention or they will get an additional bunch of wanted people to go and try and track and locate. So the task teams are already fully fledged. They are busy working in the provinces, and monthly feedback is provided. If I can quickly, maybe with General Sotoli's permission, there was a question on the 3,000 that was estimated for crime intelligence, the feasibility study that was done. That feasibility study will include the whole of CI, including counterintelligence, which was originally not part of CI during the last structure. So what we're saying there is, according to certain ratios, you can use time studies, you can use any method of determining your ideal structure. Now, if we refer to that 10,300 figure, that means that is the ideal structure that we foresaw in 2010 that will be enough for crime intelligence on all the levels. So that feasibility study included the 3,000 lakh, includes the total need on all levels. It will include from your constable right down to your lieutenant general. It will include surveillance officials, your gatherers, your analysts, your polygraphers, anyone, even your support personnel that's doing the typical HR functions, the finance functions, and the supply chain management functions. So it's a total feasibility study for the whole of the division. The security assessment that's done, maybe I heard the honorable member indicated that he's glad he's hearing that computers is part of it. If I maybe can clarify, there's three KPIs. There's a dedicated section that only does ICT security assessment. So that means there's a dedicated capacity who only looks at computer. So you can either request them or according to the assurance schedule, they will come out and they will do a security assessment of all computer environment within your section or in your division or in the department. Then there's a separate capacity that does that, the security assessment, the physical security assessment. So as I explained, you will have different capacities coming to do an assessment at your office, firstly protecting then the person, which is through the vetting process, maybe even suggesting who must be vetted or not. And then you'll have the physical the assessment of the computer environment, and then the assessment of your physical environment, the buildings. Now, when it is a covert premises, that is funded from the Secret Services account, then it means that the Secret Services account will be responsible to ensure that that building is properly secure. But when it comes to your remark with regard to the police buildings, public works, and maybe CETA, that remains a challenge. The fact of the matter, CI will definitely indicate and make it available to say what is needed. The time frame, I'm not at liberty to say what is going on there, but from our side, we are stopping where we are saying that this is what the building is needing, this is what the computer environment is needing, and then in the CI environment, our own buildings, as I say, the COVID, we can at least address that through the Secret Services account.
General?
Yeah, thanks, Honorable Chair. It's just to add on the security of the buildings. There was a suggestion that we need to look into the development of more buildings to subs, which I will personally take it up with the DG for public works. It will just also include the budget for security, which is in terms of current policy framework, it's sitting with public works. So that part we will take it up further. Then there was a question relating to the slush fund pertaining to a tool that we must look into. We take the suggestion, but it will have to work as an inter-committee matter also, because the joint that is intelligence committee, and then it's also going to be involved. But the steps that I'm going to take from my side pertaining to this matter, I will appoint the CFO for this particular secret service in the division, because currently it is vacant. And it's not something that you can leave long, otherwise it will pose a risk. Then the next question was relating to the reactiveness of crime intelligence. I related earlier to this question, but maybe to expand it, what we're going to do, we're going to link the process of CI generating intelligence to all four indicator categories in the performance environment. We will treat it as an input, but we link it to the output, which must be given by the operatives. If we extend it further to outcomes and impact, for CI to have a review into the intelligence they are providing, then they need to link the input to the impact, because what they are providing should translate into impact. And the operatives will take them through the outcome, which will then link us to the client, because the client is receiving the service. So it's going to be a performance management exercise. So we accept the proposal in terms of this. Then the next question is pertaining to an interim plan. What are we going to do in the meantime? It also talks to the lapsing of security clearance as well as the window that we need to be providing. I think, sadly, this will also put it more correct in the system, because the system has got a built-in early warning. Each and every member, when the security clearance is about to expire, the system will have to reflect that particular early warning, which is before. And the process of applying for a security clearance, they need to start in time before, so before it expires, so that we've got the opportunity. I've also indicated then that the issue of the capacity, we will be taking a relook at it. So the window part, it will be based on the period, a reasonable period of starting the process before expiry. Then in terms of current plan, Chair, vetting is going to be treated as a special project. And we will also be, part of what we'll be looking at, there are members who were in CI that were redeployed to other environments through transfers. We will be looking at that particular capacity, and our intention will be to bring that particular capacity back so that we enhance that is CI. But over and above that, in the intake that I've outlined here, there's 500 re-enlistments. We will also prioritize CI to see if we cannot get a further, that is, capacity. But then the interim measures that talks to what happens while the security clearance certificate is not yet issued is the oath of secrecy, which I think the Brigadier has touched on. And then there's also the GAC system in the organization, which we're also currently using. Those will be the interim measures. But we have an understanding that the committee takes this matter serious, and we will be working very hard to make sure that the interim plan is implemented under the quick win approach of the turnaround vision. Thank you.
Thank you. Is that all the responses? All right, members. Anything outstanding, Honorable Mshlongu?
No, thanks, not necessarily. Because earlier on, I just wanted to raise this as a caution, Chair, that Chair will recall that when we adjourned, I was to ask this new question apart from that follow-up that I had to do with journalism. That, you see, because my concern has always been that I'm not saying that the book of Jake Paul is a gospel truth to me, but it tells me something is horribly bad somewhere. And now for the fact that you have got this question of SSA money in the private account of a person, and I must say, Jefferson, thanks to journalism, because if journalism did not put the foot down, things were going just haywire with this particular brigadier here that we are talking about, which is then clear to me that Some people of SSA wanted to have a plant of their own person within crime intelligence in order to derail the entire operations of CIA. It's very clear to me, that thing, but the report will tell this thing. But now, what I wanted to raise a question on, I understand, Chairperson, that you are saying that the divisional commissioner of detectives will oversee this. It would be better that the national commissioner, together with the divisional commissioner of crime intelligence, they take a decision who really run this thing. Because if and only if they are going to run, rely on some people, as they were saying, as the commissioner was saying, this one is doing investigation, and the divisional commissioner saying, no, you are wrongly briefed. This is the actual one. And certainly, if the SSA is involved there, then there will be this confusion. They must take a decision to say, who runs this? And also clear it even by counterintelligence and all that, so that you are going to get a pure. Because even the newly coming divisional commissioner, it's not possible to get even a garbage report that will be a smack on the face of the committee. A decision needs to be taken by them to say who runs this thing so that we get a credible report that will be able to take CI forward rather than some people or shadow people somewhere operating behind, twisting the tail of the organ. Because if I can assure you, Chairperson, if then police don't have eyes and ears of intelligence, we better wash our hands. We will never win this war. Because the aim of corrupting SSA is just to actually then defeat the ends of objective of justice in the final analysis. Then that's why then I'm saying that they must take a decision. Who actually invest, not overseeing, because you can oversee something that is not yours. Thanks.
Right, member. Any other members? I think we take mainly that as a comment. I don't know if as comments from the members.
Yeah.
Right. Thank you very much, honourable members. Also to the National Commissioner's team for the follow-up briefing that we received today in terms of the progress, in terms of vetting and the turnaround in the CI environment. I think the National Commissioner in his introductory remarks also indicated that it's number one or two of his priorities to turn the CI environment around. And it's critical for the committee. I mean, this last 6 years, CI has been in a very difficult space. And in terms of leadership, of course, the appointment of a permanent divisional commissioner is also an important step that the committee has emphasized again in our budget reports and BRRR. So we believe that's also going into the new year a matter that needs the urgent attention of the national commissioner to give the necessary leadership. But it's important that the steps indicated by the committee is pursued by the management, and of course we'll await the report from the National Commission on the other issues in January. Then, honourable members, we come to the end of this year, parliamentary year. This was our 46th meeting as the Portfolio Committee on Police. I want to thank the members for their hard work and the commitment they had two oversight study tours overseas. That two acting national commissioners, that's right now one national commissioner. So it wasn't a year without some interesting turns and twists. Maybe just to indicate, next year we will reconvene in the fourth week of January. The preliminary program is available. Of course, we will start with legislation, but in that week we will also again invite SAPS to give feedback on the festival season program and other related matters that the National Commissioner wants to brief us on. We also invite the Minister of Police to the committee, and the members will, we will inform members if there's any updates in terms of the program, but most of our work until the opening of Parliament will concentrate on the Critical Infrastructure Protection Bill. We've received about 8 or 9 submissions from members of the public, and the members will also receive copies of that during the recess to study, so that they are fully ready for the legislative process. So I want to wish all the members well, and also the National Commissioner's team for the festival period. We are hopeful that SAPS will be successful, and we wish you well over that period. Honourable Bele.
Thank you, Chair. Just very briefly, I also wanted to express my own appreciation to you for your able chairpersonship of the committee and to the members for everyone always pulling together to conduct our oversight work. I did also just want to highlight, to craft our minds back to the very interesting engagement with the Italian delegation on Tuesday morning, and that's given the example they gave of how some of their oversight committees are chaired by members of the opposition. If the chair wants to take a break next year and experiment, I'm available, Chair. Thank you.
Honourable Shlongu, I'll come back.
No, Jefferson, even from my side, I'll be failing not to actually then thank you for sterling leadership and driving this ship. I think you have actually then taken us to a much more higher level to recognize the reason of our presence here in this parliament, that we are not just mere backbenchers, but really on a hands-on approach in terms of the tasks that are expected. Particularly touched me when you actually then commanded us to go to an oversight visit in KZN, which I had characterized as a killing field, which was very, very touching to me. And then the subsequent follow-up, which then proved beyond reasonable doubt of sterling leadership from your part, and also from the response from the side of uniform members or members in blue, which then brought about some promising results, really, even to the people. The feedback that one is getting is quite awesome. I must be very honest that the people there are actually then seeing kind of action which was not there. And thanks to you, Jefferson, for that. Thanks very much, but I'm so damn tired now. I must go.
Thank you, Jefferson. Let me also, from your party, say we are very grateful to have you as our chair and for steering this ship so well. And to thank one and all for the wonderful work that we are doing together. Even the members of the opposition, yes, we know there are times where we want to get to one's throat and so on, but it's part of the work. And to wish you all a good festive, and to say to our men and women in blue that we expect to be safe. Thank you very much.
One, maybe also thank our content advisor, researchers, and committee staff for their hard work during the year. Without them, we wouldn't be successful. Right, thank you very much, honourable members. We're going to close the meeting. General, you wanted to, you covered.
And thanks, honourable chair. Maybe it is also appropriate for me, on behalf of the South African Police Service, to thank the committee for keeping us on our toes, for giving us guidance, and for directing us to follow the, to make sure that policing is following the direction of the country. And finally, I want to say, yes, the police service has got challenges. And yes, CI has got challenges, but not all is lost. And I would like to confirm this with two quotes, one from Girard: just when the caterpillar thought the world was over, it became a butterfly. And Aristotle: hope is a walking dream. Thank you very much.
Thank you, General. So, honorable members, this meeting is closed. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the wonderful year.